The Honorable, the Supreme Court of Texas. All persons having business before the Honorable, the Supreme Court of Texas, are advised to draw near and give their attention, for the court is now sitting. God save the state of Texas and this Honorable Court.
Thank you. Be seated. This morning, the court has three matters on its oral submission docket. In the order of their presentation, they are Texas Department of Transportation versus Jones Brothers Dirt and Paving Contractors from Travis County and the 3rd Court of Appeals District. Southwest Key Program Incorporated versus Carlos Luis Perez from Cameron County and the 13th Appellate District. And West Oaks Hospital Incorporated versus Arthur Jones from Harris County, the 1st Appellate District. In each of these matters, the court is allotted 20 minutes for each side to present oral argument. The petitioner may reserve a portion of that time for rebuttal. We will take a brief recess in between each argument and complete the arguments before lunch. You may purchase a tape of any argument for a nominal fee from the clerk of our court. We are ready to hear argument from petitioner in Department of Transportation versus Jones Brothers.
May it please the court, Mr. Jack Gilbert will present argument for the petitioner. Petitioner has reserved 5 minutes for rebuttal.
May it please the court, this case again calls upon this court to reaffirm the federal sign case and the Little Tex case and underscore the principle of law again that the route to the courthouse lies through the legislature. This is especially true in cases where the legislature has acted and provided a full administrative remedy, along with judicial review of that remedy, for a contract claim. Under the facts and law of this case, the department is entitled to a judgment dismissing the Jones Brothers' additional or new claims that they raise at the trial court level, and indeed entitled to an order accepting the SOA court's and department's final order in this case. There are really three main issues I believe that this court is going to have to address today in rendering an opinion in this matter. The first is that in the light of sovereign immunity and legislative action, whether the breach of contract and declaratory judgment actions that Jones Brothers brought at the trial court should be permitted to proceed. The second issue is, was the correct standard of review used by the administrative law judge in rendering her opinion accepted by the department? And the third and final issue is, indeed, didn't the administrative law judge use either standard of review or both standards of review in reaching her final decision? First of all, Your Honors, in light of sovereign immunity and legislative action, the contract claim statute that was enacted by the legislature in 1997 provides Jones Brothers a full and complete administrative and judicial review process for their contract claims. The breach of contract and declaratory judgment claims, along with their attorney's fee claim, brought at the trial court should not be permitted to stand and must be dismissed. The Texas Transportation Code 201.112 provides a full remedy for a contractor dealing with the Texas Department of Transportation. Indeed, the statute itself sets out that the department shall enact some preliminary or informal attempts to resolve a claim before proceeding to a contested case here. What the department has enacted through the administrative code is that, first of all, any contract claim with the state will be attempted to be resolved on the district level through informal process with the district engineer or his representative. If that doesn't succeed, then the contractor can request a contract claim committee hearing at TxDOT, where three district engineers from across the state are brought in to hear the claim, and they get to attempt to resolve it again. Both sides present their case. If the contractor is dissatisfied with that second attempt, they get a third attempt, and that's a contested case hearing before the State Office of Administrative Hearings. After a full contested case hearing, full discovery, the ALJ then issues a proposed decision that the department can accept and adopt its own or make modifications to. But again, if the contractor is dissatisfied with that third attempt to resolve the claim, they get to go to district court for judicial review of the final decision. That is a full and complete administrative review process, much more so than this court approved, I think, in the Little Tex case under 2260. In fact, the Texas Transportation Code predates 2260. And in the collective memory, at least of our office and in reviewing I can represent that this procedure going all the way through district court to an appeal is a very rare procedure. Most all claims are resolved at the district level. It's the rare case that makes it past the State Office of Administrative Hearings for any substantial evidence review by the trial court.
Let me ask you about our standard of review. If a contractor wants to remove a DBE from the job, they have to apply to the BOP for their permission and approval.
Correct.
And whatever the BOP decides is binding on both the contractor and his sub that he wishes to terminate, correct?
That is true.
And why isn't that more like the line of cases that says that their decision in order to be overturned has to be whatever the standard is, fraudulent, whatever, the stricter standard? Why wouldn't that line of cases apply? Because those seem to have the same characteristics of those cases, that it's an interested department who makes that binding determination.
There are really two different reasons, Your Honor. I believe that predicate that the higher standard, partiality, fraud, gross error, misconduct standard, should be used in these cases. First of all, for the law reason, that the respondent, Jones Brothers, relies upon a line of cases, I think, in their brief, starting with the Black Lake Pipeline case, and said that this is more of a satisfaction type argument, looking at the contract and looking at the Black Lake case, and therefore it should be a satisfaction or reasonable person test. But if you read the Black Lake Pipeline case, it makes a distinguishing factor. It talks about State versus Martin Brothers, City of San Antonio versus McKinsey Construction, and a whole line of cases cited by the state in our brief. The distinguishing factor this court found in Black Lake Pipeline was the fact that the decision of the engineer or architect was binding on all parties in that line of state cases, State versus Martin Brothers, etc. And that's what happens with the BOP when they make a decision, too.
Well, but let's say they make the decision to allow the DBE to be terminated. What can the contractor then decide, well, no, I think I will give them another chance?
I think that's up to the contractor at that point. He's gotten approval or permission from the BOP to indeed discharge the DBE if he so chooses to do, if he's agreed or reached satisfaction with the BOP office that he can do so. But again, if the contractor then decides, no, I'm going to give him another chance, I think that he's fully permitted to do so. I don't think the department at that point would alter his decision unless the district engineer, for other reasons other than what the contractor may have found, may find that discharge should indeed be carried through.
And does the fact that TxDOT conceded during the hearing that the subcontractor was incompetent change the analysis?
I don't think so at all, Your Honor. What we have to look at is what was before the BOP.
Well, isn't that the factor that they're supposed to be deciding when regular contractor says, I want to terminate, and that's whether they're unwilling or unable, and wouldn't incompetency be included within unable to perform?
I think it would be, Your Honor, but how
so in this case, rather than applying the reasonableness test and applying the one you want, which is the higher standard, you can't give a Jones gets no effect from your concession during the trial, where you say you get a fair trial with a full remedy.
I think the benefit did go to Jones Brothers in the sense that both eventually at the end of this time period, I think in September when AK Concrete was discharged, I think by that time everybody recognized that they weren't doing a proper job. But the issue here was in June of 1995 with the information.
Well, but that's also what caused their damages, they say. If you had said we concede in June that the contractor's incompetent, then all the changes could have been made and no additional damages incurred. Would you agree with that?
Not totally, Your Honor. I think that the incompetency, again, went to the time when we had the full time period that we were looking at all the way through September. I don't think the department made any concession that the contractor was incompetent to the fact of holding up the project or being unable or unwilling to perform in June of 1995 when the BOP made its decision.
Well, did y'all disagree that whatever that contractor did was not any good and had to be corrected? See, as the record showed that everybody agreed as they went along that what was being done by that company was not any good.
I certainly concede that they weren't the best contractor anybody's ever dealt with on a project like this. But their work was still being accepted by the department and by John Brothers. They were still being paid for their work on the project during this time period. They were still meeting the standards that the inspector set out there. They were slower than they perhaps should have been. They weren't doing as good a job as maybe some other contractor would have had, but their work was still being accepted and judged by the inspectors as being acceptable and approved for payment by TxDOT and by Jones Brothers, who requested that those payments be made.
What sort of internal procedures are there if the contractor applies to the BOP to have the DBE removed and that request is denied? Can they continue to apply? Is there anything that keeps them from continuing to make this request, just submitting adequate proof?
There is nothing in the administrative code in 1995 that would have indeed barred Jones Brothers from resubmitting with additional material a request that the contractor, DBE, be discharged.
And they did not do that, is that right?
They chose not to do so, apparently. No other request was ever made to the BOP office following their decision in late June of 1995 by Jones Brothers that they were still having problems or still needing to discharge the subcontractor. With that option left open to them, they could have taken it and perhaps should have taken it if they felt the contractor was so incompetent that they weren't getting the work done.
What type of federal regulations affect the way the BOP handles this type of complaint about a subcontractor?
The department is, in these type of cases, governed by the Code of Federal Regulations that have been adopted by the Department of Transportation, U.S. Department of Transportation, under, I think, 49 CFR Part 26. It's a whole line of regulations that go into what a contractor dealing with DBE must do in large with the state. The state is required to set up a separate and independent office within the Department of Transportation that has a direct reporting responsibility to the executive director. And the executive director then oversees almost personally what goes on in the DBE program.
Does it in any way impact the way the BOP would handle this kind of complaint, standards that have to be applied in determining whether or not to terminate the relationship with a disadvantaged business?
There is nothing that specifically in the CFRs, and I'm familiar with, that directs how the department should oversee the program for a discharge or termination, other than to make sure that a DBE program is indeed being complied with, the administration and non-discrimination function of that program is being complied with. And that's why the BOP office has set up a standard of trying to monitor it by saying the burden's on you, contractor. Show us how this subcontractor is unable or unwilling to do. Because whatever the department does in this regard is reviewed by the Federal Department of Transportation to ascertain that the department is indeed promoting the disadvantaged business enterprise function that's required for the state to receive the federal funds that we do for our highway construction projects. Your Honors, the other thing that raises an issue here is the declaratory judgment actions and the contract actions brought. I hope that after federal sign and little text, that those are pretty well decided issues, and that the additional claims or issues that attempted to be brought here by Jones Brothers must be recognized as not being valid. The split remand that we have from the lower court of appeals here, the Austin Court of Appeals, is indeed a burdensome function, I think, on both parties, because essentially we have to go back to the SOA court on the decision of the SOA judge and seeing what standard of law was applied, and then we have to go back to the district court to determine if they complete sufficient facts. I think clearly that after the decisions of this court and federal sign with little text, that the remand to the trial court must indeed be reversed and rendered. At most, this case should be sent back to remand for the State Office of Administrative Hearing Judge determination. But I'm not even sure that's required. If this court will look at the decision that was offered by the administrative law judge and accepted by the department, they will find that in her findings of fact and conclusions of law, Judge Egan specifically found that the DBE on the project was decision to not allow them to be replaced was both reasonable and not based on partiality, fraud, misconduct, or gross error. So it seems like the administrative law judge, even though she found that the correct standard of law review should be the partiality, gross error standard, she indeed included within her decision and decision-making and within her opinion that it was also a reasonable act of the Business Opportunity Program Office to make the decision that it did. That indeed should justify the decision of the department, which they accepted as being the reasonable course of action in this case. The line of cases, I do want to say one quick thing. The line of cases that talk about that standard of review, again, between State versus Martin Brothers, not only is there a legal justification for why the higher standard should be used, but the department also believes that there's a public policy issue here that this court has prior recognized in cases such as State versus Martin Brothers. Indeed, in the entire line of cases that the state has cited, it is an employee of the Texas Department of Transportation acting under the contract who makes a decision as to whether the work is satisfactory or unsatisfactory to the department. And his decision is indeed binding on both the department and the contractor. That's in the entire line of cases that run from the 1940s, I think, up until the 1980s, where a series of cases involving TxDOT came up for the highway department. And in State versus Martin Brothers, I see my time has expired.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
The court is ready to hear argument from respondent.
Please, the court. Mr. Douglas Fern will present argument for the respondent.
May it please the court. This case was an interesting case to try. What's happened to it since it was tried has been rather fantastic. It was tried under the act by which the Highway Department and the Texas Department of Transportation acts. There was no evidence offered by the state in the trial of this case that the contractor, that is, the subcontractor employed by Jones Brothers, had performed the contract properly, skillfully, or any other way. Jones Brothers, after finding that the contractor was diverting water up a hill that had to be changed completely underneath the highway, they couldn't read their transits and levels.
Well, why didn't Jones Brothers submit this to the BOP in June?
Because they kept, Your Honor, trying to give the contractor or the subcontractor an opportunity to remedy the errors in that.
But if the BOP doesn't have the information in front of it, the facts and the allegations to show that they're unwilling or unable to perform, how can we say that their decisions are unreasonable?
The BOP had all that before it, Your Honor, because the BOP asked for the canceled checks that our client, Jones Brothers, paid the subcontractor, and they asked for a letter from our client to the subcontractor stating the reasons for the discharge. Anything else that they would have asked for would have been given, but that's all they asked for. So the contractor, our client, thought, Jones Brothers, that they were doing everything the department was requiring and asking for. We never got any ruling from Mrs. Gonzalez, Cynthia Gonzalez, who was with the BOP, as to what they wanted to see, what they wanted to review. She just flat denied their appeal to have the right to discharge this subcontractor. The fact that the work done by the subcontractor was substandard is not even contested by the state in this case. But we kept with that subcontractor till finally the state itself discharged the subcontractor because it claimed it was trying to bribe one of the state's inspectors. At that time, the Jones Brothers was unable to get the bidder who had bid on doing the work and finishing the work for the subcontractor to do the work because too much time had expired. Jones Brothers had to go in there, finish the work themselves and do the work, and that's what the case is about.
Well, you'll agree that the ALJ also applied a reasonableness standard, correct?
I believe that's right, yes, ma'am.
So even if we were to adopt your standard, the ALJ applied it, and is your argument then simply a no evidence to support argument?
No evidence to support what? I'm sorry.
The reasonableness finding.
Well, there is no evidence to support a reasonableness finding because that's not the finding that the administrative law judge used.
But you would agree that the administrative law judge found reasonableness under the standard you're advocating here.
Well, I don't know whether she did or didn't because her decision is difficult to understand.
Well, finding of fact 53 says BOP's decision on this project was reasonable. And conclusion of law number 5 says its decision was reasonable. So apparently a reasonableness finding was made, which I would understand would leave you with the argument that there's just no evidence to support that finding.
Well, there is no evidence to support a finding that we were unreasonable in discharging or attempting to discharge the subcontractor.
Well, but the reasonableness we're to look at was the BOP's reasonableness in making the decision to deny your request to discharge the DBE.
But the judge...
Well, and that's the standard we're arguing about here, is what standard of review to apply to, or what standard the hearing examiner should have applied. And I understand the Court of Appeals reversed, saying that the reasonableness standard should apply, but apparently the judge did apply alternatively a reasonableness standard.
We don't agree with that, Your Honor. That was our point. The administrative law judge applied the wrong standard.
Well, but they did find reasonableness, though, specifically as a factual and a legal matter.
Well, that was one of the bases for our appeal. She couldn't find that it was reasonable, and then on the other hand, find that that was not the test that she applied, which is what she said. The test that she applied was the one that does not apply to this case.
But it appears that she took sort of a belt and suspenders and said, and also it was reasonable. I mean, I don't know how we can say there was no reasonableness standard applied when the ALJ specifically found reasonableness as a matter of fact and law.
Well, but then look at the result that we were faced with by the examining judge. That doesn't add up. That doesn't match that particular citation that she quoted, because we don't think that was the apply. Had that been applied, we wouldn't be up here today, I don't believe.
So basically, we have to review the record for no evidence to support reasonableness.
I think that's right. I think that's right. Yes, ma'am. And in this case, the contractor, Jones Brothers, we think did everything that he could. After being turned down by Cynthia Gonzalez with BOP, it couldn't get a subcontractor to bid on the job within the ambit that had originally been established, so it went ahead and completed the job on its own and then sought the compensation that it said it was entitled to by going back to the department. Now, the case law that has come out since this case was tried, and they don't raise that in the argument this morning, I don't think that case law applies to this case. And if it does, in the way they might suggest, I think it's unconstitutional. What Jones Brothers did in this case, I think, is the only thing they could have done.
Why do you think the case law does not apply?
I'm sorry, ma'am?
Why do you think the case law does not apply?
What case law?
The case law that this court has decided regarding waiver by conduct in the contract area that you claim should support the Court of Appeals' decision to remand the breach of contract declaratory judgment actions.
Because I don't think you have those facts in this case. I don't think you've got the facts to support a waiver in this case of the requirement. Now,
the waiver of what requirement?
The one you just talked about. You said, why don't we take the position that the case law in this area applies, and we say we don't think it's applicable in this case.
And my question is, why do you think it's not applied?
Because of the facts of the case. Because, first of all, the administrative law judge used the wrong standard in applying what she thought the law was. And we say that I think, infringes upon the question you asked. I think Jones Brothers did everything it could. It applied to the department for permission to change, and that was absolutely flatly denied. without any reason or basis given by Mrs. Gonzalez. Had they at that time done what they did later, and what they did later was fire the subcontractor himself because of the attempted bribe, we wouldn't be here today.
Well, I'm a little confused. You're answering Justice Hankins' question with facts about the procedure that was employed and the outcome through the ALJ and through the department. Is that right?
Yes, sir.
Her question is, why doesn't purportedly our more recent cases apply to the contract and declaratory action causes of action that you raised for the first time in district court? Why aren't those barred by sovereign immunity? I don't think you've answered that question.
Because I think this is a case that clearly calls for sovereign immunity because of the conduct of the highway department in refusing to grant our client the right to change subcontractors. I don't think the cases, the more recent cases, completely eradicate.
Well, basically, you're advocating that a waiver by conduct should apply.
Well, if that's what you want to call it, Judge, I guess.
Well, I think that's the theory we've named it, right or
well,
wrong.
Well, all right. If that's what you want to call it, I think that's right. But I can't imagine a more egregious case than this, in which the contractor goes to the owner and asks for permission to change his subcontractor. And he
well,
just,
but then under the, isn't this case analogous to applying Article 2260 in another agency and applying the statute that says the administrative process is the sole and exclusive remedy of adjusting contractual disputes?
If the administrative process is properly exercised, I think the answer to that question is yes.
Well, but my next question is, if you engage in the administrative process, your real complaint is that they made a wrong decision, which you also have the right to appeal. And so when you argue about you don't think that was the right decision, I think that's a valid argument, whether we agree with it or not, in the context of you were inside that process. But the question that you were arguing about is, what about claims that are outside that process and answering Justice Hankins' question?
Well, I thought our claim was within that process. I think it was improperly handled by the administrative law judge, and that was what we appealed, Your Honor.
Thank you.
The case is interesting because I'm not sure of any situation precisely like this in the past, and that may be the reason the court granted the application for review. But imagine the situation of the contractor here that he's in. He goes out there and he employs a DBE who's to do 46% of the work in excess of the state requirement for disability or disabled. And they do their best to do the job, and this subcontractor simply cannot do it. The contractor comes into the state and asks for consent to discharge the subcontractor and to hire somebody who at that time he had a bid from that could have performed the work within the budget prescribed by the contract. That was denied. Ms. Gonzalez gave no reason for it, really. She did not make a real good witness. And she just said that I told them what I wanted, and she admitted what she wanted, the two things I pointed out to the court. They were provided to them, and there was no other action taken by the BOP. So the contractor here is in a bind. He's got to go out and complete the work that was not completed by a substandard subcontractor, and that seems to be undisputed. Matter of fact, the entire case presented in this case by the contractor is not disputed. All the state says is that what we did wrong was we should have tried a different method to contest the action of the BOP. I don't know what else we could have done that we didn't do that got us up here. And I'm hoping that the court, in granting the application for writ of error in this case, would like to find and hold eventually that this is not the case that is going to authorize this court to say that from now on out, whatever the Department of Transportation does is going to be fine because that's final. I think that if that right is taken away from the contractors to challenge the results of its appeal to the board, to the Department of Transportation, I think that's unconstitutional. And I don't think this court intended to do that when it granted the application. I don't know what the court was thinking. Obviously, I'm not a member of the court. I haven't conversed with anybody on the court. But what the court was thinking of, I was hoping that they would use this case as the case before it to resolve this dispute about just what the Department of Transportation can do and what it cannot do. And if there were ever a situation, in my opinion, that demonstrates what it should not have done, it's this case. Because this judge, the administrative law judge in this case, flat held that the wrong procedure or standard was applied in judging the conduct of our client. Now, the client, one of our weak points is the attorney's fees. I'll concede that because we can't find any case that has upheld the right to recover attorney's fees. So I see some of you making notes of that. I think it's noteworthy because if you had asked me to give my support...
Mr. Hearn, anytime an advocate uses the word concedes, the court's going to make notes.
Well, I wish that some concession had been made by the department in this case back at the time it was tried, but they were not. They were operating under the theory espoused this morning by the Assistant Attorney General that really I don't think they thought they could do anything wrong, that anything they did was final. And my time is about up. I'm going to give you back some of it. But I think this is a good case for this court to step in and write an opinion as to just how this law should apply. The argument of the state is that under the law that was enacted after this case occurred, and it's retroactive, that everything now is final with the department. I don't think that is good law. I hope the court will not subscribe to that. Thank you very much for your attention.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel.
May it please the court. Jones Brothers lost, and that's really their complaint before this court today. After a 3-day contested case hearing, where the administrative law judge heard all of Jones Brothers' witnesses and witnesses from Texas Department of Transportation, they lost.
But it's hard to understand why if the state fired the guy themselves.
But the state fired the guy for different reasons than
well,
why.
I understand, but it seems to me to be more hurtful to try to pump water uphill than it does to bribe an inspector, or at least it's bad.
Well, one costs more money, I guess, but the real reason that, or the real issue I think here is that we need to look at is what was before the BOP office in June of 1995 and what had happened to bring it to their attention. First of all, please understand that what Jones Brothers did was fire AK Concrete, the subcontractor, before they ever even contacted the BOP office. They'd written them one letter in late May of 1997 saying, we don't think you're doing a good job.
Is the department's true interest in that decision to make sure that the state remains in compliance with federal funding mechanisms?
That is certainly one of the primary reasons.
What
yes.
other interest does it have?
Well, it has other interests to indeed promote it itself. I think as the legislature has passed a recent statute also advocating the use of DBEs along with the federal regulations that we're required to abide by. It also is something the department wants to make sure that there's consistency on the job, that you don't have a constant change or turnover of subcontractors or contractors within a project, because whenever you change a subcontractor or contractor, it sets the project back. Here the administrative law judge made what I think was a reasonable and rational ruling in that she awarded some relief to the contractor in this case. She found that the liquidated damages that were imposed against them should be returned to them, and that was the order that was adopted by the department. But the additional money, the additional work that Jones Brothers claims that they suffered, the $139,000 or so that they want, the administrative law judge found that that should not be returned to them. Under all the evidence that was before her, that was her ruling, and I think that that is supported substantially by the record before the administrative law judge, and particularly when you consider that the standard of review that this court or any court...
Let's talk about the standard of review for a moment. Have you looked at any other jurisdictions to see how they have resolved this? And I couldn't find the cases in the last few days. It seems to me I've read some cases in other jurisdictions, say, where a governmental entity is a contracting party, and they are also put in charge of judging whether there's been a breach or not, there's something wrong with that. That there's got to be some sort of, it's got to be a lesser standard than, they're not treated as a court would be treated. In other words, where they're a contracting party and they're also put in the role of overseeing and making a final decision on breach or not, there's got to be a different rule. You don't treat them as an adjudicatory body. Have you seen any law like that from other jurisdictions?
There is apparently very little law, especially dealing with DBEs and their termination and what standards are going to be applied.
But not specifically DBEs, but governmental entities who are in this situation.
I've not found any law that really speaks to what I think the issues are before this court today. I did find a couple of cases that talked about a DBE, I think one out of Florida, that comes to mind, and it just basically said was that the State Department of Transportation in Florida looked at it as a good faith basis. Is there a good faith basis for terminating the contract of the subcontractor? Remember, the state is overseeing what's going on between a contractor and a sub in that position. And as such, it is not only answering to the federal government, but also to the state legislature. And also is trying to facilitate the construction project that's going on at the time to make sure it's being completed in a proper, timely manner. It doesn't serve the department's interest to make a contractor keep an incompetent subcontractor on the job.
What is the standard of the department? What's the standard that the BOP ought to be applying in deciding if a contractor can terminate?
There is now some administrative procedures in effect that came along after this case that I think gives some factors that the DBE is kind of judged by, at least to some extent. What I think Ms. Gonzalez testified to at the hearing was that she needed something to show her that the subcontractor was unable or unwilling to perform.
What are those rulings?
I see my time is up, but essentially under the Texas Administrative Code, I believe under the transportation part, around 9.56 or so, it doesn't lay it out in great detail, but it does at least apply some procedures when dealing with the DBE. There were, at the time of this action, though, in June of 1995, no administrative procedures.
Just out of curiosity, what is the standard now? When the BOP is trying to decide, do we let this contractor terminate the DBE or not? What are the guidelines that they're supposed to follow?
Essentially, I think they're looking again still, and it's a hazy standard, but it's still to their satisfaction that they're unable or unwilling to perform. Enough evidence to show that the contractor is not performing or unable to perform. And here, in that case, the information that was provided to the BOP was totally deficient. They asked for additional information. They made a determination. And Jones Brothers could have indeed contested that determination with additional facts. But the ALJ found, apparently, what BOP did in June of 1995 was reasonable. I'd ask that this court reverse and remand.
I have a quick question. Let's say that the BOP makes the determination that the DBE can be terminated. The DBE then, let's say they disagree with that, where do they go?
Under the administrative procedures that I think are adopted by the Department of Transportation, state and federal, they have a right to, I think, contest within the federal scheme their termination.
And what does that look like? I mean, they then go to federal court?
They, I believe, can go to federal court. Here I'm speaking a little bit outside my area of knowledge. But I believe that there is some administrative procedure in effect, at least with the department, if they believe that there's some discriminatory reason for
right.
the discharge. Otherwise, they have a central contract out, just like any
and so
subcontractor.
If they're able to prove under the federal regulations that the BOP did not act reasonably or acted at the higher, in breach of the higher standard. What happens then? Is the federal funding for the project taken away? What relief is afforded the DBE?
I think the DBE, under the administrative procedures, and again, I don't want to commit too much because I haven't reviewed that in detail. If it's a discriminatory reason, I think that they're entitled to some sort of relief. What that is, I do not know.
But I guess the focus of my question is, independent of the relief to the DBE, monetarily, what's the mechanism for taking away the federal funding? Because that appears to be the whole reasoning behind this.
If the federal government comes in and looks at the DBE program and finds that the state is not administering it in a correct fashion, yes, federal funds are subject to being forfeited on that particular project and perhaps other projects in the future.
And is the federal government then required to bring suit in federal district court, or how do they...
I don't think there's any suit mechanism. I think it's just in the mechanism of the appropriations of the money through the Department of Transportation.
I have another question. In answer to some questions from Justice O'Neill, there was a discussion about what the ALJ said on using the reasonableness standard, and Mr. Hearn said that we should do a no evidence review. Do you agree, or can you articulate what you think is the standard of review by the district court or an appellate court of the ALJ's reasonable standard decision, aside from whatever criteria that may exist that you said in response to Justice Owen's question?
I believe the level of review is set out in the Administrative Procedures Act 2001-174, which is a substantial evidence review. Even if the evidence preponderates against the decision made by the ALJ, if there's substantial evidence to support that, more than a mere scintilla, then the decision of the ALJ has to be affirmed and should be in this case.
Thank you, counsel. That concludes the argument, and the first call is the court will take a brief recess.